Broadcasting live from the Regis Business Center and office suites at Satellite Place in Duluth, it's time for Gwinnett Business Radio. Gwinnett Business Radio spotlights and highlights companies in Gwinnett County and the people who lead them.
And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio. I'm Mike Sam, and alongside my co-host, Stephen Julian. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Mike. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How was your weekend?
It was great. I am very excited, although very sad, that this is the next to last show of the year.
It is.
Where's the year gone, man?
You know, as we get older, the years go by a lot faster.
Einstein talked about that. Time is like a parabola, so... Go look that up.
Whatever, yes.
Georgia grad.
If you say so, Georgia Tech grad.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, we have a virtual plethora of guests today.
Ooh, nice
Take
word.
That, Georgia Tech grad. joining us from Keller Williams Realty, it's Terry Druo. From Scott Barber and Associates, it's Scott Barber. Neil Scott Barber.
Neil Scott Barber.
Yeah, surprise. And from Ankle Biters Tennis, Sean Boyce is with us today. So quite a variety.
A virtual cornucopia of business leaders in Gwinnett County. Take that back.
You're not impressing anybody, Stephen. Terry Druo will be our first guest with Keller Williams Realty. Good morning, Terry, and I apologize already in advance for myself and Stephen.
Oh, no apology necessary. Thank you, Mike, for having me today.
See how sweet she is.
Absolutely.
Tell us all about Keller Williams Realty. Obviously, you're a real estate professional. Tell us about what you do.
Well, Mike, I help people just like you buy and sell houses. I also help people with investment properties, building their wealth. Keller Williams is an incredible company. I absolutely love being with them. They have the same motto as I do, you know, work hard, help others. We do a lot of charity events, which is very important to me. We help a lot of children. In fact, we just had our annual Cares for Kids, Black and Red Ball is what we call it, and we raised over $70,000 last week, and that will be our main source of funds to help kids all throughout 2014. We don't just help at Christmas. We help year-round, and it's just amazing what we do in our own communities. So we keep it in our own schools and provide book bags and just all sorts of large things all the way down to the little things that make a difference. So Keller Williams is a worldwide company, and I just really enjoy being with them.
So for that individual or family that wants to buy or sell a home, Keller Williams is a great company, but not only that, they get you, Terry. Tell us all about Terry and your experience.
Well, I have been licensed realtor for 23 years.
So she started when she was like 10 years old, Stephen.
Right. I did. Thank you. Right. You're too sweet. So, yeah, it's been an interesting market over the years. I've seen a lot of ups and downs and made a lot of great friends along the way. Most of my clients end up being my friends. I work by referral only. So, you know, I just feel like if you do a good job, people always come back to you. I was taught very young that if you teach everyone like they are your mother, father, brother, or sister, then, you know, just do the right thing and business will come your way.
Mike, if she works by referral only, we've got our work cut out for us because we need to do such a good interview that we become her friends so that we can refer clients to her. So this is a lot of pressure on us. So Terry, I want to ask you if I'm a person looking to buy, looking to buy real estate, where should I start? What are the questions I should be asking my realtor?
That's great. So the first question you should be asking is, how much can I afford? So I would put you in touch with my fabulous lender who will take great care of you. We need to get you pre-approved, make sure that you are looking in the right price point. And then once we have that pre-approval letter and you're ready to go and we know what we're shooting for, then we get out and start taking a look at the areas that interest you, anything you might be interested in, the best school systems or a great commute for yourself to your office. Whatever it is, we'll start there with what's important to you.
And different people have different desires in that. So it's really up to you to listen and hear what's most important to them.
Absolutely. Listening is the key. You said it.
So let's go to the other side of the equation and say that I'm looking to sell my house. Same question, but let me add this little caveat. What are the myths or what are the... When someone's looking to sell their house, what have they heard on the radio that you kind of want to go, all right, let me talk it through because you're thinking all these things like you know everything. Let me just kindly educate you of you know, what are the myths that are out there?
Sure. And right now there's a lot of myths because people have heard it's a buyer's market, it's a seller's market, I don't have enough equity, now's not a good time. So there's a lot of myths that are out there right now. The biggest one currently is, should I wait till after the holidays? And absolutely not. In fact, I listed a house last week and we had 8 showings on Saturday and I received 3 offers yesterday on it. So it is a hot market. There are lower number of homes available for buyers to choose from. And what happens is after the holidays, more houses come on the market. So your competition just went up, which means you're going to get a lower price. And in my opinion, from what I hear from everyone, they want the highest price possible. So I would encourage you to list now and don't wait till after the holidays.
So you're saying if I want to sell my house and I want the highest price possible, I want a low price. You're not the one for me if I want a low price.
That's correct.
You're going to make more money for me
than I would.
Than you would.
Yes, we want to create a bidding war. Let's get it out there, price it right, and have less competition right now.
Okay, so we want Terry Druo with Keller Williams Realty if you want the most for your house. Not like me. I want to get the least. I don't like money. I just don't understand money, don't want it. It causes more pressure. Anyway.
Well, I can sell your house too.
Okay. We'll talk.
Yeah, we'll talk.
Let's have that conversation. You mentioned a lot of myths out there. Is it a buyer's market? Is it a seller's market? How would you describe the market right now?
Well, right now we are actually shifting to a seller's market. Throughout the 2013 year, we started out as a buyer's market, and it's been shifting. We're starting to even out a little bit, and we're seeing that, you know, sellers can actually get more. We're creating bidding wars, multiple offers. There's less to choose from right now, so it is becoming definitely more of a seller's market.
Here's the thing that's impressive about you, Terry, is you said you've been in the business 23 years.
Yes.
So you went through the whole down cycle recently and you survived, because at one point, everybody and their brother and their uncle had a real estate license.
Yes.
And only the good ones survived through the times we've gone through over the last several years. Talk about what it is that makes you so good, what makes you special, why, you know. There, even though my uncle and my brother and Steve is not in real estate anymore, there's still a lot of great realtors out there. Why should we look to Terry to sell our home or to help us buy our home?
Well, I really feel like I listen to my clients, and with my expertise and knowledge of the market, I really feel like I'm listening to what they want. And when you get someone what they want and they know you and they like you and they trust you, then, you know, I'm building relationships. And when I build relationships, I'm going to help get them the very best possible deal. And that's what everyone wants. So I think that's how I've made it through the market and the crash, if you will.
Terry, you talked a little bit at the very beginning about Keller Williams and kind of what sets them apart, the work in the community and different things like that. One of the things I've noticed, especially in the real estate market, and this is an outsider's opinion, is a lot of times it comes down to little things that make a huge difference. I'm going to ask you, in 23 years, I would imagine you probably have one story, maybe two, probably more like 100. But can you come up with a story that there was a little difference that you were able to notice and the client, their experience went from great to extraordinary?
Sure. I'm not very good at talking about myself, but I feel, let me think, I can think of one particular example from about a month ago. I had some clients that they really wanted to sell. They didn't feel like they maybe had enough equity in their home. So what we did is I put them in my car and we went around and looked at other properties that would be their competition. And I just wanted to make them feel comfortable that their house would be in the market and would outshine any of the others. And it made them feel good and comfortable enough to go ahead and list their house for sale and then move on to get their dream home, which they weren't comfortable in doing so until we put them in the car and really took that extra step.
It's a step above the, let me show you the list of the houses. Let's go around and look. Your house is just as good as these. That's fantastic. Now, you're not good at talking about yourself, so Mike will now, later, he'll edit that, and you'll do the storytelling yourself, right? Or maybe our next guest will.
Our voiceover talent, who will be the next guest, will do the story.
Yes, see, you came to the right show, Terry.
Thank you.
What is it that you love most about what you do? Obviously, if you've been in it for a long time, so you must love what you do.
I do. What I love is when we find the perfect home, or we find the seller, you know, at the closing table selling their house and being able to move on to Florida or get closer to their grandchildren, or, you know, be able to move to that new job, or sitting with the buyer at the closing table, and especially the first time home buyers, you know, the light in their eye, they're so excited, and it's just such a fabulous feeling. So sometimes, you know, there are things that come up along the transaction that I help them through. There's always bumps along the road, and that's where I come in to help them. And so, you know, especially the ones that have had a bumpy road and we've made it, and it's just an amazing feeling to help people and just to see how excited they are. That's what does it for me, is just helping others.
For that person or family that they're looking to sell their home and that they give you a call, what are some of the advice, things you would tell them to do to get their house ready to go on the market?
Well, the first thing is I want to make sure that when I sell their house that they have somewhere to go. So I get them pre-approved as well.
That's kind of important.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be the first step. I'll set them up with my lender again, make sure that they are qualified to purchase the next home that they want to buy. And then the second thing is making the curb appeal fabulous. So we want to make sure that when the buyers drive up that the outside looks great, the flower beds are trimmed, and everything is, you know, new pine straw, whatnot. And then as we walk through the home, I want to make sure that all the paint is fresh, if we can update any light fixtures. We want to pay attention mostly to the kitchen and the bathrooms. That is what really sells a house. So really just kind of sprucing up the house, maybe taking down some personal decor, all the family photos. Some people have, you know, hundreds of photos on their bookshelves. We want to make sure and take that down, kind of depersonalize it a little bit so that when a buyer walks through, they can picture themselves there, and instead of looking at it and going, oh, this is someone else's house. So we want to make that real easy for someone to picture their own family there.
I've heard for women, the kitchen is a big selling point for women.
Yes, absolutely. Kitchen is huge. I mean, that's where we're gathering. That's where, when we're having people over, I'm sure you've done this yourself, we all stand around in the kitchen. So you might have a huge home, but that's where it all takes place.
Okay. Terry, for those that would like to reach out to you and find out more about your services and are thinking of either selling or buying a home, how can they find out more information about you?
Well, they can call me directly at 770-277-2166, or they can go to my website, which is terrysellshomes.com, and that is T-A-R-Y, sellshomes.com.
Are there other Terrys out there that sell homes? If they are, they're probably upset they can't get that website.
Well, you know, I don't think anyone has it spelled that way. I've never seen it, and I actually Googled myself, and I am the only one that comes up with a spelling that way, so hopefully.
Are you allowed to say that on the radio? She Googled herself?
Haven't we all Googled ourselves,
yeah,
Mike?
You have to. You're always curious, right?
It's a verb.
You're right. Terry, thank you so much. Great to see you again.
Thank you.
All right. Terry Drua with Keller Williams Realty here on Gwinnett Business Radio. Our next guest here on the program from Scott Barber & Associates, it's Neil Scott Barber. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
Neil, this is not your first time in front of a microphone. Explain to folks what your company does and what you do.
Well, I did form the company, but it's really just me, and I was lucky enough to get the BritishVoiceTalent.com, which I was amazed at. In fact, I didn't really want it because I felt that was being arrogant. I just wanted to be a British Voice Talent. But everybody said to me, no, you are the British Voice Talent. So I said, well, okay, I'll do that, you know.
So you're a voice actor. You read stories. Tell us right. What you do.
Well, it's a combination of different things. I do on-hold messaging. I'm the voice in Europe of Adobe. I'm one of those irritating people. You can't get through to a real person because it's me taking you through the steps. And I record here for them. I do e-learning. I've done promotional videos and audios. But my passion that I discovered, this little niche, is I go into assisted living, independent living, and memory care and do voice acting or expressive reading. Now, what that means is that I use my facial expressions, my accents, my character voices, my hands, not my arms and legs. Well, yeah, my arms, yeah. And so that's what expressive reading means. And it appeared that nobody else was doing that, and I've been doing that now really since 2009. So that's my passion. I've extended that to do pre-K and kindergarten. kindergarten stories as well for kids.
You mentioned 2009. Is that when you first realized you had this acting voice, or was this something you've always kind of wanted to do, and just the time wasn't right until 2009?
It's an amazing background, really. I was probably about 10. I had polio. I was a very sickly kid, very shy, very worried about the future. I was just a real thin kind of kid. And somebody said to me, plus the fact, and this is important, I come from a place called Yorkshire in the north of England, and the broad Yorkshire accent is possibly sort not similar to, but if you had a deep southern accent, you might want to get rid of it. I wanted to get rid of my Yorkshire accent. And I figured out that if I could be somebody else and or stand in front of where the lights are on a stage, that I was not the sickly, nervous kid. I was somebody else, and I couldn't even see the audience, so I could project myself. So I went to drama class. I got over the polio pretty much, and about 12, I went to the Bradford Civic Playhouse and took acting lessons. And when I was 19, there's a little gap in between, I went to London with the intent of going to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art or the Central School of Speech and Drama. And I like to tell my folks in the assisted livings, but darn it, Anthony Hopkins beat me to it, which I was very sad about because he earns a lot more money than I do. But nevertheless, through my whole life I was in sales, which, you know, you can say, well, if you can act well, selling is the place to be. So I did that. And then in 2009, after a number of downsizings in corporate America and a lot of people saying, you know, oh, you have such a great accent, usually ladies, I apologize, I would say, no, I don't have an accent. Yo, have the accents, which is the only bit of American I ever do. Yeah, so was that the answer to your question? Sorry.
No, I lost track. You got Stephen keeling over there in laughter.
I love it. I would just like to encourage you with one thing, Neil. Mm-hmm. Anthony Hopkins might have, you know, beat you to it, but he is not the British voice talent. I just want to.
He doesn't have that website.
Sure. That's right.
I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So today you go into assisted livings. Talk about the things that you do today. And you mentioned, is it expressive reading
or voice acting?
Talk more about that in voice acting.
Again, I'll go into an assisted living, and I have some of these places that have me go in regularly. And I have, you know, a group of folks anywhere from 10 to 20, sometimes to 30. And I research a number of different things. They seem to love stories, a couple of my favorites, and, of course, their grandparents often in these assisted livings. So I do a lot of Shel Silverstein books, which are really for kids, and Jack Prelutsky. And, of course, I have the voices with those. And then I pick out other things. I do Irma Bombeck stories. I do stories from Churchill, who was quite a comedian as well as being a great statesman. He has a lot of great stories. I do Chicken Soup for the Soul. I do some inspirational poetry. I read Robert Frost. I do Edgar Allan Poe, Annabel Lee. And at certain times of the year, I have programs throughout the year, but, you know, recently, I've done Halloween stories, Thanksgiving stories, and, of course, way into Christmas right now, a lot of Christmas stories. And in many ways, the senior citizens seem to love the kind of things that I also do for kindergartners and pre-kindergartners. They don't put their hands up quite as often as the kids do, but it's a lot of fun.
We're speaking with Neil Scott Barber. He is the British voice talent. Neil, sounded like when you started this journey, this new part of the journey, you have some business contacts. You do voice on hold and things like that.
Sure.
Let's go back to that for just a second.
Right.
What other ways have you penetrated that market, and are there ways that you're looking to penetrate the market?
Sure. It's funny. I was working for a company that 6 months after downsized me, they asked me if I would do a video promotion for them, which was really sort of the beginning of all of this, and that was in 2008. So I did the video promotion for them, and as a result of that, being as I was then a member of what's called the British American Business Group, they asked me if I would do the introduction for their promotional work for the British American Business Group. I've done a number of e-learning. I've done some sort of narrations for organizations, internal training, education, promotional and so forth, some voice messaging, and as I say, the on-hold messaging. I'm happy to be doing that, and I certainly wouldn't turn away any voiceover or voice messaging business. In fact, I'm dealing with somebody now for an e-learning job. But again, go back to my passion. I really want to expand that. I just feel that my mission, if you want to put it like that, is to try to bring joy to these senior citizens and to kids. And I would love to, and I was talking to Sean about this earlier, to get into cancer wards for children, bring a bit of uplifting spirit and so forth. And that's why and the other thing, of course, we all know about humor being the great healer. I love to see these old folks laughing, and I get them laughing, and I get myself laughing as well.
So you started with memory and Alzheimer's and, mm-hmm. and assisted living. Mm-hmm. You've gone to pre-K and kindergarten.
Correct.
You talked about the cancer wards. What other do you want to go up the age rank a little bit, elementary?
I have done summer camps as well. And, of course, then you get children between the ages of about 5 and 12. But, again, my real passion would be to go into more assisted living, get more independent living, get more groups of children, maybe summer camps. Maybe, in fact, I'm talking to somebody about a grief counseling opportunity. Mm-hmm. Where I might be able to bring some inspirational stories to those who are grieving. I recently did, and this is another area I really want to get into. I did a children's audiobook where you buy the book it's for children at Christmas, and on the inside there's a link, and I do the audio, and that's free. You buy the book, you get me free, and so the whole audiobook, particularly for children, I would love to do because I love to do character voices.
And we're going to hear a few in just a few minutes. So I know you're already like doubled over in belly laughter.
I don't bring my life onto this too much, but this is really special because my father was a retired minister of music, and he before he retired, but especially after he retired, he went into assisted living homes and would play hymns. Mm-hmm. And he would take requests, and sure. and of course one of his jokes was, if I don't know the song, you play enough major seven chords, it kind of sounds like the song, and so they enjoy it. So this is just warming my heart to hear, because so that's what one of the things I was going to ask was, do you take any requests for books, or do you said you do some research, but do you also kind of say, or after you've gone a couple of times, they say, oh, I'd love to hear some Dickens, and you can do that?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I can't do it off the bat. I mean, one of the things about when I was an actor or tried earlier on is I could remember lines. Now I call it expressive reading because I can't remember any of the lines, which is why I have a few things here. What was the question again?
I'm sorry. I was just kind of sharing my heart.
There really was no
bit.
Question.
Oh, no, I took some of your time to tell my story.
No,
I'm sorry.
That's fantastic. I know what it was. Yes, I do take requests, okay. And I'll come back with them. And the other thing is I sometimes do a slightly higher level, maybe an independent living. Right. I do what I call question and answer. I'll go back and I'll say, okay, here's a poem, who wrote that? Here's a movie made in 1947, who was the main actor? So there's sometimes that kind of back and forth, which some of them like to do as well.
And it brings their memories, and
exactly.
Then they talk about, oh, I went to see that here, I was living. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we would be remiss if we didn't ask you to maybe share some of the characters you do and give us an example of some of the expressive reading that you do when you visit these homes.
Well, thank you. I always like to start out the very first time that I go to an assisted living, I take a Shel Silverstein book called Where the Sidewalk Ends, and I start with my little girly voice, and this is sick.
I'm going to enjoy watching Stephen as you read, because he's going to be just dying in laughter.
I'll do just little bits, obviously, because they're all a little bit too long, and we don't have all that much time. But it's called Sick, and it's about a little girl, and we probably all know people like this who absolutely do not want to go to school, and will try to use every argument in the book to avoid that. So here we go, Sick.
I cannot go to school today,
said little Peggy Ann McKay.
I have the measles and the mumps, a gash, a rash and purple bumps. My mouth is wet, my throat is dry. I'm going blind in my right eye. My tonsils are as big as rocks. I've counted 16 chicken pox. Ooh, and there's one more, that's 17.
That's... Then we do this little boy who thinks he's very, very smart. In fact, it's called smart.
My dad gave me a $1 bill because I'm his smartest son, and I swapped it for 2 shiny quarters because 2 is more than 1. And then I took the quarters and traded them to Lou for 3 dimes. I guess he don't know that 3 is more than 2.
And then we do a couple of stories from Winston Churchill. Well, these are true stories, by the way. Bessie Braddock was a rather large lady on the other side of the aisle, like you would have Labour and Conservative, or here you have Republicans and Democrats. And she came up to him one afternoon, because Churchill, you may know this, he liked to drink quite a lot, but he usually managed to continue to talk without too much of a, you know. But Bessie Braddock said to him one day, "Sir, you are drunk." Churchill replied, "Madam, you are ugly, but in the morning I shall be sober." And another story from Churchill. Nancy Astor met him one evening after some kind of party, and she was a very aristocratic lady, and she said,
"Sir, if you were my husband, I would give you poison."
And Churchill replied, "If I were your husband, I would take it." This is a little story about one more? Or?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah,
please.
We actually have as much time as you want.
Oh, okay, sorry. This is a little story. I'll do the whole story because it's a fun one. She was one of those fussy women who sometimes come into a restaurant.
"Now, mind you," she said, "I want my egg fried exactly 1.5 minutes. The white part should be done real nice, but I don't want the yolk to get too hard. About 1/2 pinch of salt, no more, no less, a sniff of pepper. Oh, yes, make sure the frying pan isn't too greasy. And I like my eggs straight from the country."
"One thing, lady," said the waitress ever so sweetly. "The hen's name is Doris. Is that all right?" And then lastly, I'd like to do my, what I call my, well, a couple of British things, you know. "My name is Claude Fitzwilliam Fitzgerald Smythe, and I am here with my wife. We're actually waiting for Kate to come out with the baby. And, here's my wife, Doris. Now, Doris, do you want to talk to this man on the radio?"
"Oh, yes, hello. It's so nice to see you. And we're really happy to be here. And, of course, we're just so delighted with this whole new business of the baby and everything. And, actually, we live close to Windsor Castle. We have horses there. Did you know that? We have horses."
"Yes, well, thank you very much. We'll move on now. Thank you." And then, of course, you know, you can do a lot of the Cockney accent and all that kind of stuff, you know. "I wish I could have been the Geico fella, you know, the get-go and all that, but, you know, they pay him a lot more than me and all that. And anyway, so there we are. And, of course, I could go back to my Yorkshire accent, which I've always tried to get rid of, but I'll try very hard to do this. I grew up like this, and my dad and me, we'd go off to pictures. He'd take me on a Saturday morning, and we'd go and watch movies, you know, like, I don't know, we had Spider-Man, and we had Dick Tracy and all that kind of lovely stuff, you know. But I got rid of that accent because I don't like it. Thank you very much, Neil Scott Barber, the British voice talent."
TheBritishVoiceTalent.com. There you go. Well, we appreciate that very much. It's very enjoyable for those companies, individuals that want to reach out to you. And I mean, because you do emceeing,
yes,
you hosting duties, yes. You know, I mean, all this, all kinds of voice work. Tell us where they can go to find more examples and reach out to you.
Okay, well, my website is, as we've talked about earlier, www.thebritishvoicetalent.com. And you can reach me at Neil, N-E-I-L, at thebritishvoicetalent.com, or by phone at 770-592-7762.
Great. Neil, thank you very much. Been a pleasure. A lot of fun. Thank
Fantastic.
You okay over there, Steven? You're not hurting.
I'm just trying not to say Bob's your uncle.
That's a good one.
All right.
No, he's not my uncle.
All right, joining us next on the show, Sean, I apologize. That's a tough act to follow. Maybe we should have put Neil third and not second.
I'm just reconsidering my options.
Would you like to come back for another show, perhaps?
At the beginning of the
show. I'll see you guys next week.
Off the air, Sean was like, I get to go last. Awesome.
Sean Boyce with Ankle Biters Tennis. I told you, we have quite a variety today. We have a real estate person. We have a voiceover talent person. And now we have a tennis camp type person. Tell us about Ankle Biters Tennis, Sean, and what you do.
We run tennis programs for preschools, daycare facilities, elementary schools. We can also do stuff locally on real tennis courts. But the best part about what we offer is we don't need tennis courts anymore. So with the big push nationally, USTA, the USPTA is pushing it as well. But the smaller courts, everybody's seen the commercial with Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf about the kids being afraid, and I'm pretty sure they were going to bring in Neil to do the voiceover of the little children's book there, but I don't think they could afford him. But they've seen that, so we're all scared of, you know, the little kids, and they can't handle the full-size stuff. So one of the big pushes we have right now is we're going to make everything smaller. We're going to make everything the right size for them, and we can go into the schools specifically and do it on location to where we don't have to worry about getting rained out. We can go indoors. It's really a fantastic difference between just what people picture as the typical tennis industry and what we're actually able to offer.
I see where your title is the national director, and you're also the owner of Ankle Biters Tennis. Is it a franchise? How does that work? And do these schools, centers, do they hire you out? How does that all?
We're a vendor for the schools, essentially. And we're not franchised at this point. So we're based in Atlanta. We have a few locations in other states, and we're expanding. Yet, it really is just business to business. So, yeah, we deal with the parents. Sometimes the parents pay us. We often prefer that the schools pay us because that's a little more consistent, but there's a different sell on that one. But the schools specifically work with us. They bring us in as a vendor and say, yep, we'd love to offer tennis. It's good for a preschool, a Kids Are Kids, a creme de la creme, some of those types of schools that say, hey, yeah, we have the typical after-school kind of extracurricular events, but this is Atlanta. If you don't have tennis, in my mind, obviously this is what we do, but in my mind you're missing out on something because tennis is really what we do here, well beyond some of the other things.
So, Sean, walk me through, for those who didn't see the Steffi Graf and the Andre Agassi thing, walk me through what it would look like if I'm sitting here listening to this and I'm trying to picture it, because the only thing that's in my mind is the large court and I've got to go to the court. What does it look like? Is it in a gymnasium? I mean, what is the program? You know, what are some of the options of the program?
The easiest thing to picture would be for most people in elementary school. In the back, they've got their gym. So we can go into the gym. We bring in our portable equipment. So we've got our tennis nets that we carry around in bags. So we've got coaches come in. If we've got 30 kids at this elementary school, we're going to bring in 8 or 9 coaches. We're going to get all set up. We can set up a physical tennis court with a net. We can draw the lines if we want to, but very often it's simply we go through the same types of routines that you would on a normal tennis court, except there's no cost. There's no major issue that schools have to say, hey, we can't do tennis because we don't have courts. You got a gym, we can do it. You got a basketball court, we can physically just set up the net and show the kids how it looks.
Now, is this normally done after school, or can it also be done as part of a school's curriculum?
A lot of it depends on the school. Mm-hmm. So the private schools, that they have their options to be able to interrupt the school day. I mentioned the creme de la creme preschools earlier. We can go in the morning because during the school, they're allowed to interrupt. The public pre-Ks, I would say, so like the Georgia pre-Ks that are going to be at a Kids Are Kids, Discovery Point, some of those preschools, we can't interrupt their educational day, so we will do it immediately after that pre-K lets out. The same thing with a government school, local schools here in Gwinnett County, as an example. We take that elementary school, they go straight from the end of their school day in class, come running out to the gym, and they're so excited, and they got their tennis rackets, and they can't wait because obviously they've been in school all day. And we're the funnest thing they could possibly think of to do immediately after school besides getting on a bus.
Absolutely. And unlike my counterpart, I have seen the commercials. I know the USTA is making a big push to go after kids to grow the sport. And so they have their own size different rackets, I believe, and are using the big foam balls as well, so they can really whack it, but they're not really going to hurt anybody.
We don't use the foam balls.
Do you use regular tennis balls?
We don't. There are different stages. So there are graduated stages of tennis balls, and the foam ones are the really soft kind of design for, I would say, the pre-K side nationally is their push. We find it's just as easy to use the regular tennis balls. One of the things we do for branding, within Ankle Biter's Tennis is we use one type of tennis ball. So it's very recognizable. It's the same color as our logo. It's the red and yellow Quick Start 36 ball, and that's exactly what we use. It's not a full-size tennis ball. You can full size is the wrong word because it's actually slightly bigger, but it's softer, pressureless. You can bounce it off a kid's head. And it's one of the things we do in the beginning to point out to the kids, bounce it off their head because you don't have to be afraid of the tennis ball, right? You can just kind of do that. And then all of a sudden it's hysterical because then the rest of the kids are bounce it off my head, bounce it off my head, bounce it off my head. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. Now this is a fun thing to get hit with a tennis ball, but it shows them they don't have to be afraid of it.
Just like Neil is passionate about what he does, and Terry mentioned how passionate she is about what she does, you're passionate about what you do. Talk about your previous life, if you will. You were a teaching pro as well. And why did you decide to get into this Ankle Biter's Tennis?
I was a teaching pro. I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. A lot of it was here in town. And I got out because I wanted the concept of doing more than just what I could do on a daily basis. It's just me. Yes, I can make some good 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day, depending on what you're doing each day. There's only so many hours in the day when it's just you, right? And Neil and I were discussing earlier before the show, it was a little bit of how do you multiply yourself? How do you do more? And when I got excited about the younger kids and I ended up discussing this kind of concept with Ankle Biter's Tennis with one of the preschools in the area, I got excited about it. And I realized, why don't I just go find some other coaches, grab another school and another school, and I could kind of multiply myself and we could do more. I could be in more places at once with people whose job it was to pretend to be me. You're to pretend to be as entertaining, as fun. I know it's got to be difficult, but I tell all my coaches, I said, your goal is to be as fantastic as I am. And they look at me funny and realize I'm just being ridiculous. But that I was able to multiply myself and do more with more kids. Now I can be in 8 different places at once.
You'd be off the scales, by the way, if you brought the British voice talent with you.
Talking about that earlier too. I got to bring him in. I'm gonna have him. Actually, we need a new training system where we train all my coaches with. They each get to pick a different accent each week. See, I think that's the way to go.
Sean, the end result of these classes, the end result of what you're trying to do. Obviously, it's get the kids moving around. Is it also to kind of teach them the basics of the game, the basic rules? I mean, what's kind of the end goals? And some of it, I would imagine, depends on their age. But just kind of talk about when they get done after a school year or a period of time, what are you hoping that, other than they had a great time, what are you hoping that they've learned?
Great time is point number one, obviously, because the tennis is how we do what we do. But we're just having fun with kids and teaching them a little bit, getting them active, like you said. But really looking for what they know about it. Do they like the game of tennis? So age-specific, all of our lesson plans, if you've got a 3-year-old, the word serve or forehand is never even going to come up in the conversation because they're happy if they can balance a ball on the racket and keep it there and not have it fall off. And they think it's hysterical when it happens. So the lesson plans are obviously different. When a 3-year-old can come in, understand that a racket can be a lot of fun and also dangerous to a child standing fairly close next to you, which is, you know, safety 101 with what we do and making sure they're separated. But if they can understand that and know that the ball is going to bounce and they're going to hit it, I mean, the phrase we use is bounce, hit, and we have to, they're learning that spatial awareness. They're learning something for a child to look around, and maybe they end up being a baseball player. Maybe they end up doing something, but they can learn those things a little bit earlier. The elementary schools, as the kids progress, we start teaching them more of the game, less of just the racket skills. It's more of, here's how you keep score, why do we call it love, and all those little things that say, okay, here's a forehand, here's a backhand. So when they go out on their USTA teams or their ALTA teams here, they've got that foundation. Whether or not they're good at it isn't necessarily the point, because a lot of that is just going to be how much they practice or their type of their coordination that they're born with to an extent. But our job is to get them excited about it and then send them out in the world and say, have fun.
Sean Boyce is our guest. He's with Ankle Biter's Tennis. Sean, how big is the program right now? How many kids are you touching? What areas are you serving? And what are your goals? How big do you want to expand?
Like I said, if the job is to multiply myself, we expand as much as it's capable of doing, obviously keeping the product solid. Where we are now, we've got 12 schools in the Atlanta area that we're working with specifically that have active programs. We've got relationships with another 18 or 20 schools where maybe there's nothing active or we're looking to start something new in the spring. We've got 3 schools, 2 are active in the Chicago area. which has been a fun project for me, trying to figure out how do we manage something like that remotely. Jenny up there is fantastic. She's my coach and managing that area. And it's two more creme de la cremes up there. We've been discussing new programs with all of them, trying to build the area. The catch is, how quickly can you expand, which basically comes down to how good are your people. So if I can trust my people, I can trust my coaches, whether they've got a British accent that Neil teaches them or they can have the best Aussie accent each week, that's fine, which would be a lot of fun, by the way. But whether they're fun and entertaining is one thing, but can I trust them? So as they go in, they've got to go in on their own. Often these are 17, 18, 19-year-old high school students that are going in, and they've got to have their own kit. They've got to be on time. So we can only expand as quickly as our people allow us to. I'd love to take it as far as it can go. But we're pushing about 500 kids right now total. And if we go back to the original question, why did I get out of teaching tennis on a daily basis? I can't teach 500 kids. I can't do it by myself. I need a network. We can do more this way.
Are you affiliated or partnering with any of the tennis organizations like USTA?
We're not specifically. It's one of those things we're looking into for 2014. So that will be part of that expansion effort, is getting more involved with the local GPTA, which is Georgia's, and then USPTA as well, and kind of finding out. But a lot of those other organizations compete with us. So GPTA has come out with a big initiative that they're pushing into the elementary schools. So we'd have to find a way to keep it a partnership and not keep it to where it's any kind of contentious ankle biters tennis is a competitor. How would we manage that? So that'd be a much more interesting conversation.
You started the interview, Sean, by saying that you're business to business in a way, because you are approaching the schools and the pre-Ks. Are there relationships you're seeking beyond just the pre-Ks and stuff? Is there a way to build relationships with other business owners that would also get you introductions into the schools? Because clearly the end goal is to get in front of children. Are there, beyond just schools, are there other ways that you've thought of to do that? Is that kind of on the drawing board for the next few years?
Yeah, the obvious one is go find a real tennis court. So if you in your neighborhood, you've got a couple of kids and you've got some friends of those kids, and yeah, we can come out and we can work on a full-size tennis court as well.
So utilizing,
we can skip the business.
Okay, so utilizing side. Homeowners associations might also be a...
Exactly.
Okay.
Which sometimes is just as difficult. If any of you own a home and have dealt with homeowners associations before, sure, Terry's the type to be involved with that, so we'll have to talk. But we've got that option. The other options outside of just the school business is typical. Let's see, ING was a good example, to where I knew somebody there. He sends his kids to his private school, but there's also a daycare facility. There's also a child care facility within the building. So those who work there, we can go in and potentially have that type of offer. We can go into sports facilities, clubs, like a Lifetime Fitness, and they will also have a little kids' corral or whatever it is they call it, and we can go in and offer that, where a Lifetime Fitness, as an example here locally, they're not going to have it. They're not going to have tennis unless they have a tennis court. Well, we can come in and be that group. So we've got different options to, I'd say, sell the idea. We can do it in different places. The question is, how do we as a business look around and say, okay, who could we possibly do this with? Another one would be hospitals. As Neil and I were discussing earlier, we have a relationship with Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, because we go down once or twice a year. We're trying to do it even more, but it's just a volunteer thing. We go down to their little area called the Zone that they have all the kids come down, and half of them are just the younger brother or the older brother of somebody that's there in the, you know, in the hospital. The other ones, they're plugged into their little IV machine, and I know how that is. I've walked around with that thing plugged in and spent my time there, but it's one of those things, you know, throw in the cancer angle, but I want to give back in that area because that's something that I know personally. So that is a direction I will take Ankle Biters Tennis, which is, hey, let's go down. Let's go be clowns for four-year-olds, for those that aren't in the preschool, that may not be able to leave the hospital, the Aflac Cancer Center. Go in there and let's bring some joy, the same way Neil was discussing in that other direction.
And assisted livings. We talked about that on the way in here. You know, maybe there's a possibility there, particularly with the more ambulant folks in assisted living and independent living.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about that. So business to business, we're already doing it.
That's what we're here for.
The show works.
We know it works, absolutely. Before I let you go and ask you about the contact information where people can find out more information, one of the questions here on your sheet is intrigues me, so I'm going to ask the question. As you build any business, people make mistakes. And you've got a question here for me to ask you. Have you made any mistakes that have set you back? So you probably have a good story that you might want to share. It's like, I should have never done that in the first place.
Now I'm reconsidering putting that down. I think it was a filler question, you know, where you go back and you try to decide which questions would I probably want to hear. Or which
we were
ones
using
might
baseballs at first and knocking off the kids with the heads on with the baseballs. It wasn't quite working out. But
exactly. No, thankfully, we haven't made any major mistakes. It's the little ones that we learn from that make a big difference, that have improved what we do. So the mistakes weren't necessarily that I'd upset some business owner and they decided to tell everybody how terrible we are. Thankfully, we haven't had any major setbacks like that. The little ones of really just learning day to day, the little things, like Stephen was asking Terry earlier, what are those little things that make a huge difference? And a couple of those times I've realized I've made the mistake of not having a first aid kit. Or some of those little things where you realize I showed up one time, didn't even bring the tennis balls with me.
That'd be important.
Seriously, I'm the tennis guy that's supposed to show up with everything. Yeah, didn't have any tennis balls with. Well, I had the real regular tennis balls that I happened to have a few in my car, but I didn't bring the little tennis balls. And that's where you go, I've got to really be creative right now, because you can't walk up and bounce that ball off a four-year-old's head because there will be tears and screaming, and it will be a complete meltdown. It won't be any fun. So it just changes. And some of those mistakes that I've realized as a business, you put those processes in order to make sure we don't make those mistakes. My coaches are not allowed to make those mistakes. They're only allowed to make mistakes that I haven't made before.
Well, and that's how you learn in any business. Just like baseball teams that have baseball night and they give the baseballs out to the fans before the game on their way in, and then when there's a controversial call during the game, guess where all those baseballs are going? Onto the field.
And that's why you never have bat night anymore. Right. I learned that one in the 70s.
Right, right. I remember going to Yankee Stadium once. It was bat night and hard liquor night. Not a good combination. Bad night overall, but we won't go there. Anyway, I can be funny too. Like, Neil's not the only funny guy around here, you know.
I know that.
I'm just not talking, you know. Anyway, I just don't.
We love you, Mike.
I don't get the punchline as well as Neil does. But if I did it in a funny voice, you know. We could talk. I could maybe help you and do some expressive reading as well. Anyway.
He's just better prepared because he's already got his stories. Everything's ready. We got to come up with it on
the fly. He has processes in place, Mike.
He has processes in place. We make the mistakes that he hasn't.
Oh. We're making the mistakes right now on this show.
I would like to say that Terry has an awesome voice, and I think she should go into voiceover as well. I think she's got a great voice.
She does.
Thank you, Neil. You're my new best friend.
And she's got the looks, too. So
I'll help you get into it.
The guys in the assisted living would like to, you know, look at Terry as well.
Yeah, there's unfortunately not quite as many guys as gals in those assisted livings, but okay.
Oh, sorry, that idea did not work. We've gone off on a really bad tangent here. I apologize, Sean. Again, we apologize at the beginning of your interview. Now we're apologizing at the end. For those that want to find out more about Ankle Biters Tennis, give us all the information. Where can they go to get more information?
AnkleBitersTennis.com. I tried to get the AnkleBitersTennis.com, but I also realized that
Agassi already had that one.
Yeah. Right. Wouldn't it be an Ankle Biters, A-N?
I was trying to go with his story from earlier, and then I realized the grammar wasn't good.
We're trying to one-up each other, and it's just not working.
It's not. I'm just, no. But AnkleBitersTennis.com, local numbers, 678-221-4191, and that's the easiest way to find more information. The best thing that we have is word of mouth, obviously, and that's one of the reasons you come on a show like this, one of the reasons I like meeting everybody else in the area. Gwinnett County is where we have our best presence right now, so it's the easiest way for if a school or a business calls us up and says, hey, we'd love to find out if you can work with us and put something together. In Gwinnett County, we can easily put that together quite quickly.
We appreciate what you're doing with the kids. Keep up the great work, and thanks for your time this morning. Sean Boyce with Ankle Biters Tennis. It's AnkleBitersTennis.com. Also, a big thank you to Neil Scott Barber with Scott Barber & Associates, but go to thebritishvoicetalent.com to find out more about him. And Terry Druo with Keller Williams Realty. Her website is Terry, T-A-R-Y, sellshomes.com. For those that want to listen, I'm doing this now without a script, so I'm going to look really bad in front of Neil, who does this all the time. But for those that want to listen to this show, or any of our other shows anytime, 24/7. You can go to businessradiox.com and click on the Gwinnett Business Radio tab. You can listen to this show or any of our other shows as well. For my host, co-host, Stephen Julian.
Mike, normally I give a nice little pithy comment, but I cannot top anything that's been done on this show already. One of the greatest of all time.
Okay. You sure? You want to try at least?
Well, we've been going down the road so far. I'm afraid we won't come back if I say something else.
All right. We won't waste anybody else's time anymore. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next time right here on Gwinnett Business Radio.